across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, August 14th, 2024, just 83 days now till Election Day, with the primary election behind us. And it's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. And wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, through social media, or by podcast, we thank you for taking us along on your day. Maybe my question for you today should be, has your coffee kicked in yet? Because we know what the morning after an election can look like, and I actually got a good night's sleep. But there was an election last night. We've been busy here looking at all of the results, and coming up, we'll tell you about the winners and losers in the primary elections. We'll talk about the state constitutional referendums. We'll talk about where we stand as we get set for the November general election, which will include more visits to Wisconsin, J.D. Vance on Friday, Kamala Harris next week on her way to Chicago for the Democratic National Convention. So a lot of political news to pass along today. It's Wednesday, so in our first hour, we have our climate check. Where does Donald Trump stand on electric cars? He was for them, then he was against them. Now he's kind of for them, but he's sort of against them. We'll talk to Melissa Baldoff about the many ways that Donald Trump has tried to have it both ways on electric cars. In our second hour, our Wednesday homeroom segment, we usually do that in conjunction with the Wisconsin Public Education Network. They spend the entire year talking up the value of our local schools and warning about threats to their health. But now we're getting into the part of the calendar where their advocacy really ramps up, and we're going to learn more about their Vote Public Action Plan, from the ballot to the budget. We'll talk with a couple of folks from the network about that. We will visit with Todd Alba as well, have a Brewers update, forecast from Brittany Merlot, and much more. You can join us along the way at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can call that number or send us a text message on it. You can also call or text us through the Civic Media app. You can also send us an email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you're watching the show on social media, Facebook or YouTube, put something in the comment section. We may see it and put it up on screen and address it there. All right, where do we start? Well, let's see. I think we've got already a comment on Facebook from Mark saying, no and no passed. The well-informed voters have spoken. So Mark right away taking us into election results that we're going to get into, where the constitutional amendments, Greg Bach in downtown Waukesha standing by for us, those amendments failed by about a 57-43 margin, only the second time since 1996 that a constitutional amendment has been defeated at the ballot box. Mr. Bach, good morning, and congratulations to the voters.
Yeah, congratulations, and thank you to the voters, and thank you to everyone on Civic Media who, we spent a lot of time talking about this, and primary elections and constitutional questions aren't the sexiest topics to discuss, but I really felt like when I saw those results last night, I was keeping them up. I'd stay up a little too late watching, waiting for them. And when I saw the results, I'm like, oh, this was like a defeat. This wasn't like skinning your teeth. This was, nope, the people have said no.
Yes, exactly. And look, this takes nothing away from Ben Wickler and the State Democratic Party and plenty of other groups that got involved. Everybody did their part. But I'm here to say that the existence of Civic Media and Up North News also played a role reaching so many people who would not have heard somebody on the radio day after day hammering on this thing, this dirty trick by legislative Republicans to try to circumvent the way that federal aid is distributed in Wisconsin. So many people had a role to play, and the voters, God bless them, they listened. They said, hey, wait a minute, this does sound like funny business. Why would you put a constitutional amendment on the ballot in August. You know, it doesn't make any sense, and the voters figured it out.
And something I didn't even know either was that, why are we looking at this all of a sudden? Why is it all of a sudden a problem after 94 years?
Yeah, yeah. It had, and of course, it had a lot to do with pandemic relief. And we remember the temper tantrums that Republicans in the legislature had. Oh, no. Oh, no. Greg, breaking news.
Oh,
Greg.
What? What?
Big, big news.
Big news.
Eric Hovde won his primary race for the U.S. Senate.
This
just in, Eric Hovde won a three-candidate primary. And to this day, as somebody who tries to be informed on the news, I still don't know who the other candidates were.
Charles Barman and Rajani Ravindran.
Good job, everybody. But you couldn't compete with Eric Hovde, who has already spent $13 million of his own money. Let me say that again. He's got so much money lying around, he could spend $13 million already to make sure that he didn't face a primary challenger, and now goes on to take on Senator Tammy Baldwin. So
squeak
good
by
use
with
of
an
that.
86-point lead. Wow.
Woo. Yeah. Congrats on that. $13 million of extra cash lying around. The big result, folks, we're watching over here on the western side of the state. In the 3rd Congressional District, the winner of that primary is Becca Cook. From Eau Claire, she defeated State Representative Katrina Shankland and Eau Claire Democrat Eric Wilson, and will now move on to be the Democratic nominee to take on Congressman Derek Van Orden. Derek Van Orden has been just an ongoing embarrassment to the 3rd District, but that doesn't matter. Republicans have a super thin majority. They're going to pour a lot into holding this seat. It's not about the guy. It's not about his behavior. It's about just numbers on a chart. And so Democrats will have to do the same thing. House Majority PAC has already pledged $4 million toward the race. My message to House Majority PAC is, that and more. Don't weasel out like you did 2 years ago. Stick with this district, because especially with Derek Van Orden in it, this is a district that can very easily be flipped. There were a lot of extremely good people backing Representative Katrina Shankland. Many of my friends were backing Katrina Shankland. And I, you know, stayed out of this. I said that we had some good candidates in here. So all I'm going to say to my friends is, I'm taking you at your word that, you know, you did the right thing. You worked on behalf of your friend and legislative colleague, but we also have a good candidate in Becca Cook, and it is time to move forward and flip that seat back. So we'll look forward to, shall we say, a spirited campaign that is coming up. Meanwhile, in the 8th Congressional District, we now know who our friend and Democratic candidate, Kristen Lierley, will face in November, and it will be Tony Weed. And again, how was it just 8 weeks ago or so? We were saying, Tony who? Tony
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Further proof that in today's Republican Party, past service and loyalty mean nothing compared to kissing the ring of Donald Trump. Two veteran legislators lost last night to a complete unknown. Tony Weed once owned some gas stations in the Green Bay area, but more importantly, he's got enough money. He sought Trump support. He got the endorsement even before Weed formally entered the race. But that was enough for voters in that district who really like Donald Trump to choose Weed over the former state Senate president Roger Roth and Senator Andre Jacques. So it's now Tony Weed who will face off with Kristen Lierley in November. Let me go through a lot of these legislative ones. There are quite a few primaries here. State Representative Dora Drake won the state Senate seat in Milwaukee, currently that had been held by Lena Taylor for a long time before she became a judge. In Dane County, in the state Senate 16th District, State Representative Melissa Ratcliffe, who we had on the show a couple of weeks back, she won about 52% of the vote, edging out her fellow state representatives, Jimmy Anderson of Fitchburg and Samba Balda of Madison. Ratcliffe is seeking the Senate seat being vacated by Melissa Agard, who's running for Dane County Executive. Melissa Agard finished first in a four-candidate runoff election last night, where the top two candidates will face off in November to be the next Dane County Executive. There was a very contentious Democratic primary in downtown Milwaukee, Assembly District 19, where incumbent Ryan Clancy, who labels himself as a Democratic socialist, held off challenger Jared Anderson by a 55-45 margin. Anderson had been endorsed by top Milwaukee Democrats, unhappy with Clancy's outspoken stance in favor of Palestinians in Gaza. Over to Western Wisconsin, Assembly District 28, which includes New Richmond and Baldwin, former state rep, former TV anchor Rob Krybek, who frequently gets confused for Pat Kreitlow, Rob Krybek appears to have advanced, but beating his Republican primary opponent, a UW River Falls student, by only about 45 votes out of about 5,000 that were cast, a 45-vote margin. There was a similarly close race in the 92nd Assembly District in Dunn and Chippewa counties, where it appears former state rep Joe Pluff is back after, I think, a 16-year hiatus. He defeated Caden Berg by only 47 votes out of more than 6,000 that were cast. In the Eau Claire County 93rd Assembly District, Christian Phelps of the Wisconsin Public Education Network defeated local author Nick Butler by only about 300 votes out of 9,000 that were cast. There was confusion up in Douglas County. A local election clerk failed to realize that the new maps moved one of her townships into a different assembly district. The town of Summit, which has about 1,000 people, was moved from the 73rd Assembly District, which did have a Democratic primary yesterday, and into the 74th District, which had a Republican primary yesterday. But the ballots were printed for the 73rd. So any votes that were cast in that township for the 73rd don't count, and nobody could vote in the 74th because it wasn't on the ballot. Now, fortunately, I guess, the winning candidate in the 74th District Republican primary won there by about 1,000 votes. So it's not likely that the snafu changed the outcome, given that there were about 700 registered voters in that entire township. But still, very embarrassing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have a few more legislative races to go over. We'll also talk about how there's going to be, again, big visits to Wisconsin by some of the major candidates. J.D. Vance is coming back. Kamala Harris, probably Tim Walz. Where's Donald Trump? I don't know. He's talking to Elon Musk about electric cars and changing his position one way or the other. We'll talk about that with Melissa Baldoff at the bottom of this hour. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Wednesday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. On this day in 1965, Sonny and Cher's I Got You Babe was the number one song and would be the number one song for 3 weeks. More in today's history lesson coming up in just about 30 minutes or so. I mentioned that this Brewers series with the LA Dodgers was going to be a tough one, and it has proven to be that way. Shohei Ohtani homered again last night, his league-leading 37th home run. And the Dodgers got four home runs overall in a 7-2 win over the Brewers. The Dodgers now have a five-game winning streak. Colin Ray has had a really good season, but he's now 10-4 after being tagged for 7 runs and 10 hits over 6 innings of work and giving up those 4 home runs. They will play at 7:10 again tonight and then at 1:10 tomorrow afternoon. And you can catch those Brewers games on several Civic Media radio stations. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. Let's review some more of the primary election results from last night. In Assembly District 24, State Representative Janelle Branchon, who Trump had endorsed and who was one of the more prominent election deniers in the legislature, was, because of the new maps, combined with another incumbent in a district, and she lost to State Senator Dan Knodel in a race between two Republican incumbents. And former State Representative Tim Ramthan, remember him? He lost a challenge to fellow Republican State Senator Dan Fayen. In Assembly District 69, Karen Hurd, an incumbent Republican from the Eau Claire County area, is actually moving to Clark County to have a better district under the new maps, and she won in her primary against Lori Voss. In Assembly District 86, around Marshfield, again, two incumbent Republicans drawn into the same district, and in that one, John Spiros beat Donna Rosar. In another instance of Republicans combined into districts in the 55th District, Nate Gustafson of Fox Crossing won in his primary over Representative Michael Schra of Oshkosh. In another instance, Republican Elijah Benke of Oconto defeated Peter Schmidt of Bonduelle. Let's see, and we mentioned the 92nd and the 93rd, so that takes us through the results. But if you missed it up at the very top, again, the constitutional amendment proposals failed, roughly with 700,000 Wisconsin voters saying no, compared to about 520,000 Wisconsin voters that were willing to vote yes on that matter. Now, there will be other referendums coming up in November. There's another attempt by legislative Republicans to amend the Constitution. This one deals with non-citizens voting, something that's already prohibited in the U.S. Constitution. And there will also be many, many, many school district referendums. And we'll talk about that in our homeroom section in the next hour as well, because the conditions out there haven't changed. The legislature has been controlled by Republicans who have been shortchanging public schools for a dozen years now. And even though there was a slight increase in the last state budget, it is still far well below what districts need to operate just at current levels because of the spending restrictions put in place by the legislature. Their view has now been, we're not doing our part. You're just going to have to turn to the local taxpayers and make them hike their own taxes if you want to keep the schools operating, because we're not going to give you something even to keep up with inflation. And so there will be many referendums for school districts on the ballot in November as well. The Up North News Daily newsletter comes out early every morning, and here's one of the stories Christina Lori put in today's edition. Today is the 89th anniversary, 89 years ago today, that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed into law the Social Security Act. Social Security is 89 years old today and ensures that seniors and the jobless and the injured and others have benefits and economic security and don't fall into poverty because of old age or injury. But the thing is, in our newsletter story, if it wasn't for Wisconsin, it might not have happened at all. 3 years earlier, in 1932, Wisconsin became the first state to give its citizens unemployment compensation benefits. It was all part of the Wisconsin IDEA, the starting point for a federal unemployment insurance program that became part of the Social Security Act in 1935. So you can read more about that and read about the role that University of Wisconsin alumni played in the development of Social Security and Medicare. You can find all of that in our newsletter. Sign up for it over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner up on top of our homepage. A couple of other notes from today's newsletter. Greg, I was a little surprised to see this. Of all of the 50 states, best and worst states for Uber drivers to make a living. And the best and the worst states are right next to each other. Wisconsin is ranked 50th. The worst state to make a living as an Uber driver.
I swear to God, Minnesota.
Number one was Minnesota. Yeah! where an Uber driver's average salary is $40,000, which is 9% higher than the state's living wage of $37,000. Wisconsin has a couple of things working against Uber drivers. There are some other rideshare competitors that were already established in the state. And according to this article, Wisconsin customers don't tip nearly as well as in other states. Stop being chintzy, kids, if somebody's giving you a ride, okay? I will rail against tipping at things like a fast food counter, but tip your driver.
What, Wisconsin? What are we... We gotta have a talk. We have to have a talk between now.
Okay, everybody, go over to the other camera here. Greg wants to talk.
Meet me over at camera one.
Yeah.
Wisconsinites, what do you mean you're not tipping your Uber and Lyft drivers? I don't even understand this kind of malarkey, this kind of dangummery, this bunk, as my dad would say. They work hard. Just because you don't want to do it doesn't mean they'd be nice, tip them. We'll meet again in a year.
There you go. And we'll talk about this some more. One more article in the newsletter, and it's my story on how Republicans have been making it harder to vote in Wisconsin since 2020. And that's not some opinion. There's the actual moves that have been taken to make it harder to vote in Wisconsin. Doesn't mean, oh, we're making voting more secure. We're improving integrity. No. We're just making it harder for qualified voters to vote, and look for that there. So, Greg, you say you haven't seen enough presidential and vice presidential candidates in Wisconsin yet?
Why, no, Pat, I haven't. Can I see more?
Have I got news for you.
Oh, boy, howdy.
J.D. Vance is coming to Milwaukee this Friday. He's going to be talking at the police union office there, which whether you know, police officers who are thankless heroes by an overwhelming margin compared to a couple of bad apples out there, but a couple of bad apples out there are doing things that are not only making for a bad environment out there, but they're also playing right into the hands of people who want to play politics with law and order. And that's exactly what J.D. Vance is going to do. He's going to continue a campaign of fear and lies, and that if you just fear everything, if you fear cities, if you fear black people and brown people, and if you hide behind the police and say, we must give them everything and more, you know, that's maybe how you win elections, but not how you build trust or a safer society. But that's what J.D. Vance is going to come say. And then you've got Vice President Kamala Harris, who I'm getting conflicting reports on whether it will be with or without her running mate, Tim Walz. But that will be at the Fiserv Forum coming up Tuesday during the Democratic Convention. Going to have that rally at the Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee on her way to the Democratic Convention in Chicago. Melissa Baldoff and our climate check coming up next. You're up north. Now it's time for our climate check that we do each week at this time with our friend Melissa Baldoff. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm amused. I'm amused today, and I'm sure you are too, because you know what today's topic is. Yesterday, everybody was talking about the Monday night interview, quote unquote, that Donald Trump did with Elon Musk on his dumpster fire of a social media platform, but when it worked anyway. But we thought we'd take a step back because, I mean, it was just so odd to have these two together and acting like bros, and Trump talking about electric cars so differently than he was before. So we thought we would explore Donald Trump and electric vehicle. Why could that be, Melissa? It's one of the great political mysteries of 2024.
You know, it is, you know, I am old enough to remember all the way back to the RNC last month. Oof. When he said, I will end the electric vehicle mandate on day one. So,
Said it all the time. Here's the New York Times headline from May. Can Trump really slam the brakes on electric vehicles? Like you said, he wanted to end federal support on day one. And yet now we see headlines that are more like, Trump now embraces the new rhetoric, never mind his old rhetoric. Trump admits supporting electric cars because of Elon Musk's endorsement. Well, it's not just the endorsement, is it? It's the checkbook.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, we heard, Donald Trump say he kind of had no choice but to be at least a little bit for our, you know, EVs because of the endorsement of Elon Musk. You know, he said, I'll see what he said here. I'll just repeat his words here. He said, I'm for electric because I have to be, you know, because Elon endorsed me very strongly. So I have no choice. Which is very telling, I think, about Donald Trump is that in the way he operates is that he is very much a quid pro quo kind of guy. We've heard him before, telling oil and gas industry executives that he'd be happy to provide them big tax breaks in exchange for their donations.
That's
he's going to, allegedly,
I guess,
pretty much have to support EVs.
I guess they didn't come up with the $1 billion that he was trying to shake him down for.
Maybe not. Or maybe he'll only be supporting Teslas. I know we also saw reports that he had been gifted a Cybertruck. So, we'll see. But we did learn, quite a bit from that, like you said, that event Donald Trump and Elon Musk participated in. It's always wild when a self-proclaimed tech genius can't even operate a live stream on his own platform, but so it goes.
And so they had this little love fest, or they kind of made up given the terrible things that they'd said about one another. And you used quid pro quo, and the word I would have used, same thing. It's transactional. Everything with Trump is a transaction. And if you're going to scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But of course, I'm going to make sure that I get the most out of it, is the way that he's always been. So let's get to the heart of what this is. Because the Biden administration has a very ambitious climate proposal, and that includes a rule by the Environmental Protection Agency that's designed to ensure that more than 50% of new passenger vehicles sold in the U.S. are all electric by 2032. So that's the goal. You pair that rule with tax incentives for automakers to produce the vehicles and buy them. So when Trump talks about ending a rule, what he's talking about is ending the payments that go to car makers to make, cleaner burning cars that are better for the climate, that are better for our health and things like that. And he wants to get rid of those incentives. And again, it's all rooted in transactions. And right now for him, transactional relationships are based only in money. He's not embracing Elon Musk because he suddenly had an epiphany about the changing climate.
Absolutely. I mean, this is somebody who, for more than a year has been, blasting the EV policies as lunacy. And, this is not because he has had a change of heart on our environment, for sure. And it's, it is important that you pointed out, the way this has been structured and the way that we are moving towards this, cleaner future when it comes to our automobiles, is that the automobile manufacturers in the U.S. have largely been pretty supportive here. And we're seeing a lot of new jobs related to the EV economy in terms of people who are manufacturing the vehicles, people who are building out the charging infrastructure across the country. So, for him to, if he does get reelected to another term, and if he does, keep his promise to end the EV mandate on day one, that is going to have a big impact on our economy and on people who are working in the jobs that are supporting the EV industry. So, this is not just something that's going to impact people, on an ideological level and, do I like electric vehicles or not? This is a big economic issue as well.
Yeah. I mean, right now, just if Republicans were to gain the White House and the House and the Senate, Republicans would likely try to rescind parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, including nearly $400 billion in tax credits for clean energy, for battery manufacturing, for EV sales, and of course for the manufacturing as well. And look, a New York Times article reminds us that for years, automakers were fighting these efforts to impose tight limits on tailpipe emissions. But now that the Biden administration has taken them to this point, including with all those incentives, if Republicans were to take control of Congress and the White House, they may talk about repealing parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, but I don't know that these automakers, and like you said, all the other ancillary industries, they may not necessarily, you know what? They may be chanting what we're hearing at the Kamala Harris rallies. We're not going back.
Exactly. We're not going back when it comes to our economy and, you know, costing auto workers their jobs, and not going back on our environment and cleaning up the air. You know, we know that this is a part of how we're going to improve public health. And I think, you know, this is something we're finally seeing, you know, after years of effort, more people, you know, having an interest, getting on board with. There's, you know, really that shift in support for these cleaner technologies, and to just, you know, to cut it off is a really, you know, beyond misguided policy decision. It's a really dangerous one on multiple different fronts.
I don't know if you're aware of this, Melissa. Actually, I think you said it a few minutes ago. Donald Trump's not a very smart businessman. And here, for an example, here's from Ford Motor Company, William Clay Ford Jr., who's the executive chair. And he's pointing out that in the business world, the last thing they want is a business model that has to change with the political winds. He says, our time frame as a company, our planning time frame, is a lot longer than election cycles. And when we're whipsawed back and forth by politicians, that becomes really difficult for us. And I think the consumer probably feels the same way. I feel like they already understand, by and large, you know, where the momentum is for cleaner burning cars and electric appliances and all of those things. And I think you've seen enough of a polling that there's not going to be some kind of a public U-turn all of a sudden and saying, you know, no, we don't want all these advances in technology and all these new jobs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly right. You know, it takes, like you said, it takes a long time to build support for some of these big policy shifts. And it can't just be that we're resetting every 4 years. That's not sustainable. You know, in the sense of, you know, environmental sustainability, or just sustainable in terms of how you operate. You build these big, you know, structural changes, and you get the support for them, and it, you know, you develop that support over time. You build support in communities. You get people on board. You move them along. And to just think that you can change that every 4 years or every 2 years, if, you know, Congress is going back and forth, it's completely absurd. And to think that businesses can operate that way, that people can operate their, you know, their family's budget that way, that, hey, you know, I might have a job for 2 years or 4 years, and then I might be out of work because I've trained for an industry that no longer exists. And now I have to go learn a new trade or a new, start a new career. So to think that, you know, as we change and evolve, that some one person could set us back decades is really scary.
Yeah. Let's take this closer to home now, where Governor Evers and other Midwestern states, Great Lakes states specifically, are working on an entire network of electric vehicle charging stations. And again, while you may by and large see Democratic names attached to this, if there's one thing that Democrats and Republicans together understand, it's the importance of tourism and building out this kind of a network across the Great Lakes states, again, is nothing but positives for each of these individual state economies and the regional economy as well.
Absolutely. And I think that we have seen some great partnership from the Great Lakes governors when it comes to this effort and several other ones, like you said, related to tourism, related to infrastructure, you know, really looking to get that partnership. And, you know, Wisconsin is going to be seeing more than $78 million come in over the next 5 years to build out our electric vehicle charging network, which is incredibly exciting. That's going to support drivers, businesses, tourists. It's going to, you know, grow the economy, grow the workforce, and that is all across the state. It's something that wouldn't be possible without the bipartisan infrastructure law, without the support of the Inflation Reduction Act. And it means that we are going to have better transportation options, a better transportation network, more people getting to work, better environmental outcomes. And, you know, we're going to see people benefiting from that all over the state.
So let's try to sum up then where we think we're going on this. If Donald Trump were to win the election in November, and if Republicans were to win as well, even if Trump wins, he might turn out to be on an island about this. Whereas if Democrats are in Congress, if Democrats are controlling the White House, then we see much smoother sailing toward an entirely new and thriving economic sector. I think I've got the election day pretty well summed up as far as where Trump stands versus, you know, a whole lot of everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I think that if, you know, I think if this is what Donald Trump really thinks is great, he should pick up a phone and he should, call auto workers and let them know he's, you know, ready to get rid of their jobs. He should call up companies like Quick Trip and tell them he's going to claw back the millions of dollars of infrastructure investment that are going into Wisconsin that will benefit businesses like Quick Trip that are going to get charging stations across the country. I think that if this is something he thinks is so great, he can own it and see how people respond. And I'm going to guess the response is not going to be so good.
No. Melissa Baldoff, thank you for trying to help us make heads or tails of Donald Trump's flip-flops on electric vehicles. We appreciate it as always. Talk to you next week during the convention.
Sounds good.
We'll be looking forward to that, of course. And I think at that point, we'll talk a bit about, as far as the convention goes, what will Democrats be saying in Chicago about the climate versus the Donald Trump record overall. Melissa Kay from WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids joins us for today's history segment. Coming up next, you're up north. Today's history lesson begins with happy birthday greetings to Dash Crofts of Seals and Crofts. He turns 86 today. Dash Crofts, his birth name was Daryl Crofts, born in Cisco, Texas. Seals and Crofts had a number of soft rock hits in the 1970s. And in a little 70s soft rock music trivia, along with Dash Crofts, it was James Seals. James Seals' brother, Dan Seals, was the England Dan in England Dan and John Ford Coley. The two groups whose songs were basically, you couldn't tell one from the other, because that's the way that I joke about Metallica or the Grateful Dead and all the songs sound the same. We can totally say that about 70s light rock back in the day as well. Right, Melissa Kay?
That is correct. Sorry, I was waiting for the garbage truck to go by.
Taking away all those ballots that have been counted. Melissa was up very late.
You hear that, folks? Ballots are being thrown away. Oh, my God!
I had nothing to do with counting ballots. No, nothing.
Not ballots. No, all the notes that Melissa had to take on the ballots being. How long were you up working on election night coverage?
I was late. I was up until about 11:30 or so.
Oh, bless your heart.
Well, we did live election coverage, which was great. It was interesting to see the AP numbers jump up and jump down and jump up and jump down. We don't know what was going on.
I noticed that as I was looking back at the chat. There's all these different chat boxes going on in Civic Media as well as Courier Newsroom, and it's a lot just try to monitor everybody's conversations. And at one point there was like, they've got 100% of the vote in. No, wait, it's only 80%. And election night is a constant state of flux, shall we say.
It is.
And I've done plenty of those and always thought, boy, how nice it must be in the early morning. You come in early and all the work has been done for you. All you got to do is read the numbers.
Poof,
and now
magic.
I'm on that end of things, and I got to tell you, it's pretty darn good.
Rub it in, Pat. Yep. Rub it in.
I put myself to bed at 8:05 last night. I was just like, no, I can't anymore.
You earned it.
If I started, following the results, I would just have to stay up with it. And so thank you and everybody else at Civic Media who worked on following these things. And we'll update everybody at the top of the hour, of course. But thanks for getting up and playing along with us for today's history lesson. David Crosby, music legend, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young. He was part of the Yardbirds for a while and some other groups. He was born this day in 1941. Here was one of the big hits when he was with the Birds. David Crosby passed away about a year and a half ago in January of 2023. Dr. Frank Oppenheimer of, movie fame. He was born this day in 1912, passed away in 1985. Author Danielle Steele is 77 years old today. Were you a Danielle Steele fan?
Oh, I've read some. I mean, there's a bazillion books.
Yeah, I people who can do that, who can crank out all those books, you know, Stephen King and others.
Well, with Daniel Steele, they're not a whole lot different. You know, they kind of have, they follow the same story arc every time. So predictable, but they're comfortable reads.
That's just it. If they're comfortable reads, then yeah, people are going to keep reading them. So yeah, without a doubt. I realized, Greg, that I didn't give you a cue for Steve Martin's birthday. Do you have a tune for that there or no?
Him playing banjo?
Oh, here we go. Steve Martin is 79 years old today. Happy birthday to Steve Martin.
Man is a legend.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson. Only Murders in the Building season 4 soon.
That's right. Yeah, I just saw the commercial for that. Only Murders. Magic Johnson is 66 years old today. Actress Halle Berry, 58. Mila Kunis is 41. The number one song this day in 1965 was by Sonny and Cher. I got you. You feel like you're in a movie?
Oh, God.
Always.
Wow.
First of 3 weeks there for a song better known for Groundhog Day now than anything else. We mentioned earlier that President Franklin Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act this day in 1935, creating a pension system for the retired. And 3 years after Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson did this little duet called The Girl Is Mine, they made a little bit of news. Let's play a little of their song together, back when they were friends. Every night she walks right in my dreams. Since I met her from the start, I'm so proud I am. So back when they were a little tighter, shall we say, Paul McCartney gave young Michael Jackson some advice to invest in music publishing. Well, on this day in 1985, Michael Jackson made a winning bid of $47 million for the rights to 250 Beatles songs written by McCartney and Lennon. Turned out to be a really great investment for Michael Jackson. Really not good for their friendship after that.
No.
But, you know, careful the advice that you give. Yeah. Today is Love Your Bookshop Day.
Woo!
There you go. Yeah, somebody likes her bookshop.
Bound to Happen Books in Stevens Point is awesome.
Okay, there we go. This is National Creamsicle Day. Not a big fan of the creamsicle.
Yeah.
But, you know, other people.
I'd eat one if you give it to me.
Oh, okay. This is National Financial Awareness Day. This is National Calligraphy Day.
Ooh.
And National Tattoo Removal Day. Greg, how many tattoos are you sporting these days?
17, 18.
The question being, if you had to eliminate one, could you pick the one that you would eliminate and have removed?
Yeah, I
could. Gotta think about this. It's like picking one of your children.
Well, he's got 17 to think through, so that's quite fair. It's fair.
Yeah, I would actually. Okay. I would get. So this is not a statement on the person.
We can come back to you on this if you want.
All right, we'll talk about it later.
Sounds like we got to unpack some things.
Never mind.
Here.
All right, fine. Here's the answer. Yes. There you go.
My answer is no. I only have two, so.
I want to give Melissa time to talk about the WFHR, WIRI Customer Appreciation Party.
Yeah, we are so stoked about this party, and I'm going into it with little sleep, so it's going to be a bang, man.
What is it? Is it today?
It's today.
Details.
Details. Okay, it's from noon to 6 at the WFHR, WIRI Parking Lot Party in Wisconsin Rapids. And yeah, it's in the parking lot. We're going to block off the parking lot. We got El Taco Social Truck is going to be there. We're going to have a hula hoop contest. My favorite thing is that kids are going to be able to come and try out radio jobs. I've got little mini scripts written for them that they can fill in the blanks to be a morning host or a music DJ, sports broadcaster, or a news reporter. And then we'll record their scripts and put it on. Oh, get this. Hold on.
I love this.
What about Shock Jock?
This USB, yeah, right? USB wristband.
Oh my
USB drive.
God.
It's a wristband. All right. And it's got our call letters on it. It's awesome.
Have fun, Melissa. And then get some rest. More in our next